Bobby, everything. What is up?
What's going on, my brother?
Man, you put on a shirt for me. I appreciate it. This is awesome. This is awesome, man. I've been watching your YouTube stuff, and it was funny because I think you go through like 10 hairstyles per episode. You know, the hair will be down, the hair will be up, the glasses will be on, the glasses will be up. You're like,
I got to keep it interesting.
absolutely. Well, real quick, let me just say thank you for taking the time to jump on with me here. I'm a big fan of what it is that you do. I'm a big fan of people spreading truth to the musicians that are out there. I'm a big fan of artists that have a passion to also teach in a world where everybody likes to hold on to their stuff. You're like Mr. Collaborator, you're Mr. Give Freely. And I always want to do whatever I can to shine a spotlight on others doing what I do. People laugh at that sometimes. They're like, Rick, why would you highlight someone else who does courses and does the stuff that you do on Instagram? I said, because it's like a restaurant. We have different ways that we prepare our food. We have different ways that we like to do things. We have different ways to come across with people. And I love the way that you come across with people. So first off, just let me say thank you for being authentically you. And tell everyone who may not know who Bobby Everything is a little bit about yourself and what kind of brought us to this. And then I got some questions for you and some fun stuff.
My name is Bobby Everything. I am from Ohio. I have been dabbling in the music business since the MySpace days. And I make music myself, but I've always had a passion for helping. And I feel like I get more fulfillment from helping other artists versus actually making music myself. I do love to make music and, making videos is fun, but I think it's got something to do with when you start making music, it takes a while. Like you really got to grind before your music really starts helping people on the masses. But
Sure.
like with my information, I'm able to see my informative post help people. Like I can make a post and it can help 1,000 people,
Sure.
and I just get a lot of fulfillment out of
Well, what's
that.
interesting, too, and what you said about that is that artists, I always say everything we love about artists, we hate about artists, but we need them to be that way. You know, it's like they spend so much time and energy into this thing that they love, that they absolutely know will have impact. And then they sit around and wait for people to find it.
Right.
And I'm like, that's not the way that things work. There's no shortage of people trying to get people's attention. And one of your posts that I was laughing at, and I'm like, oh my God, what a brilliant idea, is the library. You know, so many artists saying, I don't have equipment, I'm broke, I can't do this. And you did this post about, you know, if you get a library card, which is free, you can
Yep.
also go rent stuff, which is free. Share a little bit about these strategies because you seem to go find things that no one else seems to find or was even knowing to look for it.
Well, the library strategy, I was just at the library one day and I look over and I see like a green room. So I'm like, oh, that can't be for the public use. Like, there's no way. So like I go glance in there, they got the microphone, MIDI keyboards. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This can't be serious. So I go up to the desk and I'm like, I was wondering what's going on with these rooms over there. She was like, yeah, they're open. Just fill out this paper and you can go in there for an hour. I was like,
Oh my
wow.
gosh. Do you
Yeah,
know how
so
much content you could shoot in an hour if you know how to
right.
shoot content? Oh my
And
God, you could
then
have months of material.
the crazy thing is, like, if nobody else comes, you could walk back up to the desk and be like, hey, I want to do another hour. And that was in Dayton, Ohio. So Dayton, Ohio is probably a city of 70,000. So like
Yeah,
it's
it's,
kind
yep.
of a bigger city. But then I went to the library in my hometown. But this is called the Tech Center. So it's
Oh, it's
like,
even got a name for it. You know
yeah,
there's good
it's
stuff
like
in
the
there.
library's over here, and then maybe four blocks over, they have a tech center where people can come get on computers, and they also do the same thing. So,
Wow.
yeah, I know that a lot of libraries do it, but you know, I'm not going to say
some research.
All
yeah, do some
right,
research.
Do your own research. Yeah, I'm just giving you guys research. What I know.
You know, what's interesting is I had this kid one time. I was getting ready to go on live during a webinar, and he messaged me on Instagram, and he's from Nigeria. And he said, "Rick, I'll be on the call." This is my best, I guess, Nigerian accent. I don't know why we do that. We talk about people from the country, we do our best white guy trying to do Nigerian accent. He's like, "Rick, I'll only be able to be on the call for like an hour because the place that I steal the free Wi-Fi from, they close and they turn off their computer." I'm like, here's a kid so hungry to get the information. And then we have people that are in our country that have this sense of entitlement. Talk about that, because you're a pretty straight shooter like I am too. You're like, you know, that is, what is it that you think makes people feel that they're owed something?
It's crazy that you mentioned entitlement, because right before the call, I had like one of those motivational kind of YouTube videos just playing in the background as I was getting ready for the day or whatever. And that was like one of the things they were touching on was entitlement. And I was just thinking to myself, like, that is like one of my greatest assets, is that I have no sense of entitlement. You know, I don't feel like I'm owed anything. I know that exactly what I get up in the morning and work towards, that's what I'm going to get. And like a lot of people just don't have that. And I feel like you could blame the parents for sure, because it has to be a certain way that a child is raised up. You know, like if a child is raised up.
I grew up with divorced parents, and I was working since I was 12 years old. You know
right.
what I mean?
You're not going to have a sense of entitlement versus somebody else who grows up, every time they ask, they get like, this, that handout. And, you know, it affects them in their adult life because they turn 18, but they still have that sense of entitlement because they've been handed everything since the day they were born. So
I think a lot of that has to do too with, you know, there's things that we can do to build up our children, but there's also things that we can do that are going to damage our children when they go out in the real world. You know, it's like I told somebody one time, I said, if you want a hug, go get it from your mama. But if you want to know what you can do to make your music better, come talk to me and I'll help you. You know, it was, and that's kind of what Taylor, when I was working with Taylor Swift, she's like, "Look, my mom and dad will kiss my ass all day. Rick just tells me what work needs to be done and shows me how to do it. And we kind of go get it done." I want to ask you a personal question, and you've shared a little bit about on this. Do you think it also has to do with your recovery?
Me?
Yeah.
As far as my
mindset.
I grew up not having much, you know?
Yeah.
And so from at a very young age, I was, you know, wheeling and dealing or hustling.
Yeah.
And going out to get what I wanted on my own, not counting on anybody, because like I said, if I count on somebody else to do something for me, I'm only setting myself up for failure.
Right.
So, you know, but like as far as the recovery, I'll say that has given me a confidence to know that anything's possible.
Okay.
You know, because that's another thing, like belief. If you don't believe that you can make it happen, then you know, you've already lost the battle before it's even started. So
this is Bobby and I's first time conversing. So I'm 31 years sober. And
oh, I thought you said 31 years old. I was like, dang.
I wish, you know, 31 years sober. So when I turned 50, I also was 25 years sober that year. So I'd been like sober for half my life. And I always tell artists, I say, listen, I said, your past does not define your future, because I am living proof. So if you're going to try to use that as your excuse, you're talking to the wrong guy. Because I went from being homeless, strung out and addicted to crack cocaine to launching one of the biggest music superstars in the world. I didn't finish high school. I didn't go to college. I went to the school of hard knocks. You know, mm-hmm. I have a master's degree in the school of hard knocks. I it's funny. People will say, I said, well, I do have a GED. And Scott Borchette at Big Machine Records, he says, no, you have a GSD. I said, what's that? He goes, you get shit done. He said, that's what you want. Rick Barker, GSD. You know, he said, that's what we pay you for, is for finished. But I'm noticing sometimes that the artists that come to me are always, and I don't know if that's an insecurity that they're afraid to put themselves out. So they're going to make all these excuses on why they can't do it. So I find myself being a therapist a lot of times more than I find myself doing on the music side. And I was listening to some of your lyrics and it's like you were, it's almost like you were rapping about go out and promote your damn music without saying go out and promote your damn music on a couple of things. And I'm going to link those in the show notes because I'm like, wait, he's sitting here doing like a promo pitch in his rap to tell people you need promotion. You need to go out and get people. Was that purposeful or what was that all about?
Well, like you was saying that you was being a therapist, like some of my songs have actually derived from, like the lyrics may have derived from like a reading from like, what's the, not the gist for the day, the language of letting go.
Okay.
Are you hip to that book?
I'm going to be hip to it now because I'm all about that.
So basically language of letting go is like a gist for today book from the NA, but it's geared towards people with codependency issues.
So
like maybe I'll read across the topic in there and like that will inspire me for the day. I'll be like, okay, I'm gonna go write a song about, you know, living out my purpose, or I'm gonna go write a song about, so you know, it all kind of ties into just everything I've been doing as far as going to treatment. It wasn't just drug treatment, you know, it's therapy.
Life,
you know,
treatment.
Yeah, it's like I'm working on my mind. When I went into treatment, I was already 18 months sober because I had just been in prison for 18 months. But I still knew that if I got out and was left to my own devices, I would find my way back into misery. So I made that conscious effort, just like you're saying, people don't want to, or people want to make excuses for not putting themselves out there. No, they just, they want to make excuses because they don't want to do the work, you know?
Sure.
And like, I knew I had to do the work. So I went into treatment for a year and did the work. And, you know, it was the best decision I made.
Good for you. Yeah, it's funny because I met my AA sponsor in jail who ended up marrying me and my wife. And, you know, it's, he played such an active role in how I turned out in more ways than just being my sponsor. People laugh when they're like, Rick, you went to jail? I'm like, yeah. They're like, I go, I was arrested on the radio. Who all could say that? They came and pulled me right off the air. You know, I said, I'll be gone for this commercial break and I won't be coming back. You know, it was like, because I was that guy, we were talking about entitlement early. It's like, so I was a disc jockey for many years in Santa Barbara, California, number one rated disc jockey, thought my shit didn't stink. I was, you know, I was, it was what's in it for Rick? What's in it for Rick? And I got when I first got sober, cocaine I knew was my problem. And I used to drink so I could drive. I was so high. So I never thought alcohol was a problem. And then I got 3 DUIs in a year. And I'm like, well, I guess that's God telling me alcohol is a problem. And if you keep drinking, you're going to get drunk and you'll do drugs again. So I figured since I stopped drinking, I had to turn myself in for 17 days on one of those, the second like DUI. And I'm like, all right, I'm done. St. Patrick's Day is my sobriety birthday, which is pretty funny because it's one of the biggest
drinking days
ever. Yeah. So I turned myself in, come out. I said, okay, so now that I'm not drinking, even though I have a suspended license, I'll just drive. There's no way I'm going to get pulled over. Woo! Get pulled over, violation probation, driving on a suspended license, put the ankle monitor on, it comes off. I go, man, that was just bad luck. I get caught again. So now this is double violation of probation. And finally, I had a judge that didn't feel as highly about me as I felt about me. And he's like, Rick, no means no. You are no better than anyone else. And if you want to, the proof in life that you are no better than anyone else, I recommend everyone go spend a week in jail. You will realize nobody cares about your stories. Nobody cares about, everybody's innocent, by the way, just so you know, everybody's innocent when you get in there. You realize that you are no better than anyone else. So I ended up getting sentenced to 11 months, ended up doing 4. And I call that the best, worst time in my life because I gave up smoking when I went in. I said, if I can go in here and not smoke, I started working the steps before. See, and here's the part you were laughing about. You went to treatment 18 months. I went to jail 3.5 years sober because I wasn't sober. I was dry.
Yeah.
There was no program. There was no anything. I mean, I'm that knucklehead that went to jail sober for shit that he had done a long time ago. And the reason that I share that with people is, one, is because your past does not define your future. If they're struggling with something, I want them to know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel if they choose that light. And also, too, is if somebody has someone in their life that's struggling, don't give up on them yet, because you don't know if God's done working with them. And I'm not here to put religion on anybody. That's just kind of the way I look at it. And that's why when you shared that stuff about your recovery, I said, here's a guy that I can get behind. One, because he's willing to share his struggles, where most people on Instagram are renting cars and flashing money that they don't own to look impressive and try to impress people that they don't like. This guy was just being super real, and that I honor you for. And I'm excited to, like I said, be able to share you with my world. Now let's shift to the Crockpot Cartel show, which is absolutely hysterical. Where, what is it? Where did the name come from? And once again, I'll have links to his YouTube channel, but it's like a home shopping network thing for music. It was the funniest thing to watch, because every now and then the crock pot pops up and then your hair was changing and here's your offers. And I mean, it was pretty funny.
Well, the crock pot cartel, I was in treatment. I was in sober living. I had been in sober living for about 6 months. Right when I first got to sober living, I knew that I wanted to do something to help people with music, because I have some knowledge about music. I'm interested in music. I knew that I wanted to go into that, but I just didn't really know what I was going to do. I was planning, you know, I started an LLC. I started manifesting, and it was April. My son told me he wanted to be a video game live streamer. So I said, okay, I'll figure out how to live stream. So when you get 14, I can, you know, already have everything for you. You know, I can teach you. I have the knowledge. And then I started live streaming, just making beats on FL Studio. And, you know, you're in the music industry. You know, some people, when they're in the studio, they might say that they're cooking up.
Cooking up, yes.
Yeah, we're in the studio cooking up. So I was doing the live stream. Mind you, I'm in sober living. I'm in full-time drug treatment. Just every night when I get home, I'll stream from 9 to 11. And one of my roommates was sitting on the couch. My mom had just given me this crock pot as a housewarming gift, because like I finally phased up and I got to move into a house and have my own room. And so I was sitting there making beats. I seen the crock pot. I was trying to make my friend laugh. I was like, yeah, we in the studio. We cooking up. This is the crock pot cartel. It just kind of rolled off the tongue.
Wow. Okay.
And then maybe a week later, I was like, I'm going to do a music review. I seen other people doing music reviews, yep. And like just the negativity and toxicity and talking down. I was like, man, I think I can create a more helpful music review. And I was like, let me do a music review. I did it one night. People enjoyed it. And I told myself, I said, I'm going to commit to doing a music review Monday through Friday, 2 hours a night for the next year.
Wow. And
it changed my life. By the time I got out of treatment, which was in November, so I don't know, 5 months later, I moved into a little efficiency and I started streaming 4 hours a night. So I started going full time, and it's
that became your job.
Yeah, it's changed my life, you know, like.
Wow. And then you started creating resources to help people. It's like, I was joking with people. I said, you don't have to charge a lot. Now, we can, because the knowledge that we have for the right person can save them tens of thousands of dollars and make them tens of thousands of dollars. And I was looking at what it is that you were doing. And I saw the Crockpot Cartel and it made me laugh. And the reason that it made me laugh is that when I was the social media mentor for American Idols, I was trying to explain to the contestants that, look, at top 24, all of you can sing. It's not, it's no longer a singing contest. It's a vote getting contest. I said, and the people that watch these shows are usually 40 to 50 year old women. Mm-hmm. It's like a game show to them. They pick their little pieces and they root for them. And then when they leave, they interchange the pieces. So I was talking with Nick Fratiani at the time, one of the contestants. He was like in third place. And I said, do you want to win this show? He said, yeah. I said, you need to go where the women are. I said, I'm going to introduce you to a friend of mine. Her name's Lisa. At this time, you were just being able to start streaming live on Facebook. And when you did it, 20, 30, 40,000 people would show up if you had a big following, because at that time, Facebook let everybody see it. So she had this website, this Facebook group called the Crockpot Moms. And it was over 1 million women that shared crockpot recipes. So I went to Lisa and I said, can Nick go on and talk to your crockpot moms on a Facebook Live? Because the rule was they couldn't go on and sing, but they could go on and talk. So yes. Here's young, good-looking dude showing up to crockpot moms. His mom joined. They talked recipes. He ended up going from third to first. And these ladies called themselves the Crockers. So he wins American Idol. The confetti's coming down. I'm in the front. And he looks at me and he goes, the damn Crockers helped me win this show. So he's doing this interview. And they're like, so, you know, with the judges, with the mentors, what was the best advice you got? He goes, the best advice I got came from Rick. They're like, who's Rick? They're like, well, Rick's our social media mentor. He turned me on to this Facebook page called the Crockpot Moms. And I would show up every night and just talk to him and then say, hey, by the way, here's my 1-800 number. Don't forget tomorrow. And that just reminded me of the same thing it was with Taylor. The more you get to know your audience, the more your audience feels that they know you, the easier it's going to be to make a living. Because if you think about it, as an artist, you're in the $1 friend business. You just need to find a friend to give you a buck. And now that you're like, damn, I don't have any friends because no one's giving me any money. No, it's you're not putting yourself in a position to be able, one, to offer. You have no offers that you make. And two, they're not going to figure it out on their own. And that's what I loved about you is the simplicity at which you just kind of make things happen. You know, you just kind of said, hey, you want to know how to do this? Here, I'll show you how to do this. Hey, you want to do this? Hey, let's do this. You want to do this? Let's do this. So I'm a big fan of what it is that you do. I'm excited to introduce you to my audience. And then I have a question for you. When you ask people to keyword, so I'll make sure that you got links, but he's Bobby Everything on Instagram, and you can link to the Cartel Crockpot show from there as well. When you have people keyword you, you know, just DM tips or DM this, how do you respond to those? How is that? Is that an automated system for you?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay. Because if not, I was going to give you one. Because you're starting to get a lot. I use InstaChamp. You know, I'm a big fan of what they do. And
I'll have to check that one out.
I'll gift it to you.
I use ManyChat. It's like a monthly fee.
And I will gift you a lifetime membership for free. You will never pay another dime.
Oh, that'd be great.
InstaChamp. And yeah, we have different packages that are available. But I was just looking at that and I'm like, all right, cool. And how good are you at your email follow-up? Have you started creating nurture?
That's sequences? What I'm working on right now. Like that's at the top of my to-do list. Like if I shared my screen right now and you see my to-do list, that's what it is.
I'm going to take that off your to-do list. I'm also going to gift you access to all of my trainings. One of them's called the Fan Extraction Formula, where we show you how to build an email nurture sequence and then how to do proper broadcast emails. And I'll gift that to you as well. You're giving so much back to everyone else. The last gift I want to share with you, are you familiar with Florence Scovel Shinn?
No.
The Game of Life and How to Play It.
Absolutely. Oh, it's a book?
Yes, it's a book. Okay. She's an author. This book has been in publication since 1925.
Those are the books I love. I just finished the book that this came out in the 40s.
This one's a quick little read. She also has, if you go type her in and I'll email this to you, there's a audio version of it on YouTube. So I listened to the book while they were flipping the pages. I went and I ordered 20 of them immediately off of Amazon and I gave them to my kids and I gifted them to my daughter's boyfriend and her friends I do coaching with 10 people at a time every year. I gifted them and mailed them off to all my coaching. You need to check her out. It's definitely what you put out is what you get back. It's absolutely unbelievable, but someone turned me on to it. I read it once a week. It's that little of a read, and it has had such an impact not only on me but the people that I surround myself and it's allowed me to better serve my community by being able to better serve me. So
For sure.
you'll have some things coming to you through the email, and I hope one day if you ever get down in Nashville, we're able to connect. But you guys all go follow Bobby Everything on Instagram. Check out the Cartel Show. If you want music reviewed, this is where you go. I was up watching it the other night. It was just cracking me up. Like I said, you'd start with your hair down. You'd start with your hair in a bun. You'd start with your glasses on, your glasses off. It was unscripted, and it was a lot of fun. And that's the stuff, if you're going to spend, I always tell people, if you're going to spend your night on a screen, at least put something good back into you. Because there's so much BS that's out there, and we can find ourselves going down rabbit holes. And if that BS is the last thing that's in your brain before you go to sleep, that's going to affect the way you sleep. That's going to affect the way you dream. That's going to affect the way you wake up tomorrow. And if you're going to bed with positivity or laughter or humor in a world that's so cluttered with showing us all the shit that's going on, these are the kind of fun things. And that was one of them. It cracked me up. I was just laughing, man. Like I said, I thought it was a Home Shopping Network song review crock pot show. I'm like, he needs to like sell those crock pots for like an Amazon referral link or something.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun.
You do. I appreciate you, my brother.